Wait, wait, stop, that's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. So today we have our guest. Our guest today is Melina Kalonen. And Melina is a third generation Jehovah's Witness, but she's an ex-Jehovah's Witness currently. And sadly, like many Jehovah's Witness children, she grew up in an abusive home. Abuse that come from her dad, which Melina is overcoming through therapy. So thank you so much for being on the show today. Welcome, Melina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a little bit nervous. I'm a little bit nervous.
Yes, understood, understood. Well, I probably what led you to this podcast today is all the training you had on stage being Jehovah's Witness. So you shouldn't be too nervous.
and I have had a lot of training. I gave my first part when I was 5 years old on
stage. I bet that was more a nervous thing because you're 5 and you're on stage.
I was pretty nervous. I think the worst was when I had to do the assembly part a couple of years ago. But I was apparently as a kid, I was just always so full of confidence. I was like, I got this. So I don't know what I was thinking at the time, but yeah, I made it through when I was a kid. I became an unbaptized publisher when I was like 6 also.
Yeah, well, yeah. At least for me, and you can tell me how you feel, I had taken away a lot of great things from my upbringing. One of them is what we just spoken about, is teaching us to be in public eye so early and being the confidence to talk about shit you don't know about, and then and then you have the confidence to talk about it. And
yes, you're right.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because my daughter, I was dropping her off at school, and this is actually her first year in public school, because she has homeschooled since first grade, since I went back, you know, that's the story to go, but she was like, well, at least it helped me. Like, she says her teachers all love her, and you know, she feels like what she took away from it was, you know, she's got the manners, she knows how to deal with like people of authority, even if she doesn't like them. She's like, I can deal with them and they don't even know I don't like them, thanks to the witness.
Great. And that's a great skill of awareness. I feel like awareness is very important, and gratitude, regardless of what happened that you don't like, but picking out the good stuff. Because in everyday life situations, if we're awareness of our surroundings and present, there's often at least one thing that's good. Even if you, I don't know if you read a book by Frank Frankel, the book is called Men's Search for Meaning.
No, I haven't, but I will have to check that out.
It's a great book. It talks about him. All his family died, except for his sister, probably, in World War II. He went to the
concentration camps.
Yes.
Right?
Right. He went through it, and the book is called Men's Search for Meaning, how he was self-aware, living in the present, and he could find the gratitude in so many things. He found the gratitude in drinking 3-day-old fish water. And it talks about that. Right? And he talks about how, because of those skills he had to learn and do, that's how he survived, and how that's how a few people survived, because they had hope and they were living by the day instead of like not having hope and waiting to die. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, so that was like a little tension, but yeah. So tell us who you are and what brings you joy.
What brings me joy?
What brings you joy and who you are?
Well, who I am. That's something that I've been trying to find out since I've woken up. I'm a mom, I'm a friend, I'm a sister, I'm a girlfriend, I'm just a woman that's now finally found, I feel, a peace that has never existed in my 39 years of existence until now. Mm. I work full time. I have 3 kids at home with me, who are my life. So it's hard when you're a mom to say who you are, you know? I've finally embraced my Disney addiction, and me and my family got to go to Disneyland this year. And I'm the type of person that I try to make things happen as best as I can. Mm. And in the past, it's kind of gotten me in trouble because I grew up, one of the ways we grew up was, if you recall, treat people the way you want to be treated. Like, that's embedded in you, right?
Oh,
like,
my God, Jesus, I get in trouble for that.
When Jesus was on earth, right, that is, we were told, we followed, the book, The Greatest Man, we studied, like, you follow Jesus' example, right? And I feel like a lot of the people that end up waking up and take to heart, uh-huh, are actually the genuinely good people who really tried. Like I tried. Like, I left when I was a kid. I said, screw this, but it was more of a rebellion thing. I was not awake to it. It was like I was living this constant guilt, like, I'm going to die at any minute. Mm-hmm. This is how I've lived up until recently. I'm never going to be good enough. I'm never going to be able to live up to Jehovah's expectations, but really it's the organization's expectations. If I don't go tell the elders everything, my relationship with God is crap. You know, anything I do, any good I do, right? But yet, even when the thoughts started coming in and the questions, I felt so guilty and horrible. But, you know, I just tried to do my best, and I always tried to do good for others. Like, the mom, parents who never could get their kids out in service, I went and I picked them up, paid for them to eat, kept them at my house. They were friends with my friend. You know, my kid, people be like, you're a single mom, why are you doing all of this? And, you know, the ones that were talking the most crap were the ones with all the money. Of and course. I'm the one that worked part-time taking care of as a single mom, but still managed to help other families. And... And don't get me wrong, there were those in the congregation that were very helpful. And like you said, we have to look at the positive. And I took, and I'm sorry, am I going off on a wrong tangent? I don't know.
No,
you asked me about me.
No, keep going. I love it. Yeah, keep going.
But I really tried to be that person. And I felt like when I left the organization, I tried that out into what they call the world. And I was like, I was still looking for, in my mind, I was still thinking witnesses are the only good people, you know? Mm-hmm. So I found fault and I said, no, this won't happen if I go back. So I went back 7-8 years ago and it was worse. They were worse than I could have even imagined. And constantly making you think, like, I felt like, not that I felt, I had people telling me, like, this is only happening because you're a single mom. Those elders would never talk to you, or this person would never talk to you if you had a husband. And I went through that for like 7 years. Different things that would come up, whether some sister was accusing me of flirting with her husband, which I am not the flirtatious type at all. Maybe now that I lost some weight. But no, I wouldn't be. No, I'm so in love with my boyfriend. I'm so happy I found my soulmate. It's amazing. The universe brought me who I needed. Mm-hmm. And I'm so, so happy. But back then especially, I'm not the flirtatious type, period, but back then especially, I was always so cautious. You always have to worry not to offend.
Yeah.
That's who I am. I drive my boyfriend crazy now, apologizing all the time. who I am, I apologize. I feel like I always make a mistake. I feel still, even though I'm so happy now, there are those still, those, what do you call, ghosts, phantom characteristics that are still popping up, you know, because you can't help it because of the way you were trained, the way you were programmed, you know. You're programmed to think that you are nothing. You are imperfect. You are never going to be okay until after 1,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, and that's if you make it. Because all these screw-ups, he's keeping account. And you know what? If you didn't go tell those elders everything, you know, the elder that beats his wife like my dad was, or that cheated on his wife like my dad did, or yelled at his kids and treated his kids like crap and beat them like my dad did. You know, all those kinds of elders, the ones that's watching porn and the one that's cheating on his wife and doing all that stuff, those are the ones that are able to judge you in this organization.
Of course. That's Human History 101.
Right.
Correction, that's religion, human religion, history, 101.
And it's so crazy because I never saw it, I never noticed, I never realized. You know, of course you watch these movies and you see, you know, the self-righteous, the devout Christian that goes off and really they're the evil one, you know. How do you not know when you're growing up that you're surrounded in the evil cult organization when your whole family does it?
Mm-hmm.
Your whole family. My grandmother was a pioneer who stayed faithful while her husband was in the military. And once he passed away, she pioneered and went to conventions. My two aunts both married men who became elders. One was a Bethelite and is now serving near Bethel. My other one is serving where the need is greater. You know, like I come from very strong, you know, very high expectations. And I've lived my whole life feeling as the failure of that because I never was able to stay on their track. And that's who I became as a person, and that's what I'm fighting now. Is I finally am happy. I finally know that all of this is BS and that it's not right. When I finally researched and did the one thing that the cult tells you you're not allowed to do.
Uh-huh.
And that's what helped me to start waking up and becoming a happier person and a happier mom. When I finally talked to my kids and we had this one-on-one, it turned out that, you know, my kids were all feeling the same way I was.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But it's been a journey. Sorry, so, I kind of just went off and answered one question.
So what brings you joy?
What brings me joy right now is my family, my kids. I enjoy my job. I work graveyard. I work 60 hours a week, but I still love it. Being ourselves. We don't have to hide who we are. That's what brings me joy. That's what makes me happy. I love to read. I love music. I love watching Disney movies. Right now, Encanto brings me the most happiness. Have you seen it?
Not yet. Is it? You know, I'm not a big fan of the modern stuff.
Right, but this is Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I don't know if you like musicals, but the music is amazing.
Okay.
And actually, the reason I bring it up is because when you watch that movie, my daughter said it. She's like, this is like every JW out there, because they're trying to be perfect, they're trying to do everything right, and it's just not enough.
What is the name again?
Encanto, Encanto. It's the new Disney movie.
Okay, I'll put that on the show notes once I...
You'll have to check it out, but it's a very cute cartoon, yes, but I've been watching that a lot, and it brings me and my whole family a lot of joy.
Oh,
but
nice.
The music in it talks about, like, the pressure. Like, the songs are very much relatable. One of the girls was perfect, and she had to be perfect in everything. What happens when you're a Jehovah's Witness? You have to be perfect in everything.
Yeah, I have this perfectionist
right.
personality also in All or Nothing. But I had to learn, like you mentioned, ghost emotion. I had to learn to have a balance, because those things make me who I am today. And I love who I am. Those things are not a problem for me, but they have been a
right.
problem for other people. Because one thing I've done is basically I have high standard for myself. So therefore I had it for others. But now I still have high standard for myself, but I don't expect that from others. So I had
right.
to learn to adjust.
And it is an adjustment. And I stopped expecting that from, of course, the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, with seeing what had happened. And there were those out there. There were those. I'm not going to say everybody was bad. That's not true.
I think everyone did their best. Not everyone, but most people did their best, and they fall flat on their faces because that's not human.
No, it's not. It really isn't, and the expectations are not practical. But I couldn't deal, my kids brought it up too, is I couldn't deal with the hypocrisy. I couldn't deal with the judging. It just seemed like as, that wasn't it actually what set me off. What set me off were other things. But it was just a constant, it beats down on you. You know what I mean? Like when you turn around and this is happening, I had a sister hit me who we got in an accident, actually. No, I hit her, right? It was when I started to see that there really was no love. We were the elders, these idiots. I'm telling you, we had a kingdom hall. This is when I started to really question things. We had a kingdom hall for service, for meeting for service. As you know, they meet for service, right?
Right.
Well, they decided several years ago, we don't want to use the hall, even though there were four congregations at that kingdom hall that meet for service. They decided our hall needed to be the special one, not using up utilities or whatever, and we needed to meet at people's houses. Well, on the busiest day that everybody goes out, you would think we would meet still at the Kingdom Hall, right? Because of parking, cars. You got 40 people going into this 1,000 square foot tiny house. Imagine how big the living room is. And then you got all these cars in this cul-de-sac. Double parking around a cul-de-sac in the middle of a street. What kind of witness is that giving, right? They didn't want me to call the cops because that would have given a bad witness, right? So I was dropping off kids. I was late because I had picked up other people's children. And this sister was literally parked in the middle of the street. And I got her just at the corner, right? Well, get this. I had insurance, of course. But I told the sister, I said, you know, this brother and sister that were pioneering offered to fix it for me. They were literally going to fix it for free. It happened in service. Oh, no worries, Mel. You're a single mom. No worries. I kid you not, that sister went to her husband. Her husband went to the elder. The elder said, you need to make that sister file a insurance report.
Oh, wow.
Excuse my language, but that motherfucker took the insurance check, gave me a bunch of BS, gave the elder, my friend Noe, who was trying to help me and convince the brother to just let the other people fix it, that did it professionally, had his own business. And they were friends, get it? They were friends with that couple that was willing to fix the car. Oh, no, we want it done right. We want it done right, blah, blah, blah. And then took me to the elders like I hadn't filed, but they had not even spoken to me saying they wanted it filed. They got the check. They went on vacation, and they never fixed the car to this day, 3 years later. And that brother's a ministerial servant.
Well, I think it's that power dynamic thing, because they can do it, and so what to you?
Exactly.
And you're a woman, so what are you going to do?
What was I going to do? I didn't have a man to speak. The only man that was ever willing to speak up for me was not my husband. He was like my best friend, like my brother. And I grew up with his wife. Like, me and his wife were like born together. Our families, our dads were in the same congregation growing up. And, we were with each other for the past, like, several years. Our sons were best friends. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfectly okay. You don't need to be sorry.
He was like my brother. You know, the Jehovah's Witnesses say brother, sister, blah, blah, blah. No, he was... He was the elder that actually you could think that saw things for what they were, and he called out bullshit, you know? My son was in his son's wedding, and we actually stayed in just so that my son could be, they're going to hear this probably, and it's fine, I don't care. We stayed in, chemo, physically in, mentally out, just so that my son could see his best friend get married. Because we knew once we did it, it was it. They were going to cut us off, you know?
Right.
And so when everything started happening, we started leaving, that guy, he's the one that always stood up for me. He called the guy, tried to talk to him, called the elders. I even had someone call him and say, hey, you need to straighten Melina out. Like, he was my husband or something, but he was more like my brother. And when we were getting ready to leave, he said, I will talk to you. We go way back. I'll talk to you anytime. Well, I didn't act fast enough, I guess. You know, with Jehovah's Witnesses, there's always a time limit for their kindness or whatever, I guess. So I finally responded and I said, I can talk, whatever, right? And I was feeling like I was at a point right before the holidays. I was like, let me just say bye, you know, to my best friend. Because he was. I even got to the point where I didn't really talk to his wife as much, because if I talked to her, it went to him anyways. So I might as well talk to him, you know? And I loved her. She was like my sister, but she never went through the things that me and him had gone through. So she didn't know. She never left the religion and came back. And we just had a kindred spirit. Well, 2 weeks ago, not even, I get a phone call from him. And he has an elder on the other line. Mind you, I don't know what their intention was. I don't know what it was about. But I didn't stay on the line. But he had told me that he would talk to me. And he never gave me that courtesy. He literally called me on a three-way call with another elder. And that elder was the biggest asshole you could imagine. Like, the epitome of when you hear people say elders really don't give a crap about their flock or whatever, like, that was him. He only cared about the few people that he liked, which was the one who his wife studied with, and he was just a dick to everybody else. Nobody could stand him. And that's the one, and I couldn't believe that, and that was the one that my supposed brother called me on the phone with and expected me to talk, like I was going to talk. Wow. And I don't know what they wanted to talk about, but I've not gone vocal about literally said hashtag XJW or anything, but I have said some things about, like, no more mind control, no more, like, that we're free. I'm not hiding who I am anymore. And that's something that for the first time in 39 years, I can honestly say. People think that I'm posting what's going on with our holidays and birthdays and everything to put in people's faces. I'm happy. I'm sharing with those that are in my life. I'm sharing our happiness. We're happy. I have nothing to be ashamed of now, finally.
Mm-hmm. And if they don't like it, you know, like you said, that quote, putting things in your face. If you don't like it, walk away, block, unfollow, unfriend. There's no such right. thing putting something in your face, because you're willing to be there.
I took everybody off. Zen. I deleted just about everybody, except for a few people that I felt would kind of have an open mind. Because, you know, if you know Jehovah's Witnesses, and this is what I learned as I was on my way out, and I had small, mild conversations with them. Every single one of them is making it work for them. They are doing their own altercations, whether it's the elder that watches Star Wars and Marvel and all the magic that's in that and plays video games, or it's the housewife that gets drunk every weekend when they go out with the friends and hires a maid and is so lazy and doesn't even do anything for her house, but her husband spoils the crap out of her and she gets to do whatever she wants. Or you got the other one who says, can't stand the elders, can't stand what they're doing, but her husband just got appointed, so she's got to keep her mouth shut, even though she's so upset that she got forced out of a congregation she loved to go to another hall to help. Like, they are all talking shit everybody's talking crap. Everybody has a problem. Even my friend that shunned me, the housewife that is so spoiled, she shunned me when it turned out that my kids went vocal with their friends about no longer being witnesses, because she could not risk anybody knowing that she had anything to do with me, because she wants her husband to be an elder.
So a lot of people are physically and mentally out because they are in fear.
They're mentally in. That's the insane part.
They think
these adjustments and what they're allowing is okay. I've got a self-righteous family of pioneers. My son, a few years ago, he was like, Mom, Matthew has Call of Duty on his thing. Mom, Matthew has this game. Matthew has this game. I tell you, they are the most judging, self-righteous bastards you could ever meet. I'm serious. They talk shit about everybody and everybody's spirituality. But does she know that her son, who's a ministerial servant and a pioneer, is doing that? Does she even know what kind of games he's playing? He's like 25 years old, but they use the thing that he's autistic. He's not. He's high functioning. He's perfect.
Yeah, that's the thing with JW is even with the autistic. I grew up dumb. I wasn't self-aware until I was 25 because I grew up dumb. I think a lot of us are growing up
smart.
Dumb.
They're very, yeah, we did. And he was homeschooled too. But when you talk to the kid, he's very intelligent. He's probably in his early 20s still, 25 or so. But he plays whatever. And I'm not judging them. When I'm saying these things, I don't want to sound like I'm judging these people.
Oh, I understand.
It's just I could not live like that.
Yeah.
I could not live with me saying, going to the assembly and saying, okay, I was 12 years old when this assembly hall was built. I was with my dad, who was in charge of the paint department. And yet, when we go, every time we go, it's $10,000 to $12,000 for one day at this assembly. Why? This assembly is 38 years old, or 28 years old. That I remember, the land was given to us. The work was free. People go and volunteer to do maintenance every weekend. But yet it's, you're telling me it costs $100,000 because, you know, they do assemblies 2 days a weekend, right? It costs $100,000 to run this assembly hall every month?
Weird.
No way.
The money's going to Patterson.
Or even if we round it down to $10,000, it costs $80,000 to run an assembly hall that seats 1,500 people, maybe? And you're only using it 8 times out of the year? I mean, out of the month? So I started questioning those things. That's kind of what started me on that. But what I did learn, like I said, all of them are making their own altercations. They're all making their altercations in that religion. So you can't say that any of them, if they're listening to the governing body and those talks, not one of them are doing what they say.
Right.
If they're watching Star Wars, if they're playing video games, if they're watching any kind of any TV show now that has a gay kid.
Anything, any television, because I remember us growing up in the 2000s, the web was the web of the devil. Now all of them are on Facebook talking shit about, oh, Jehovah. And I'm like, and I would respond. I don't do that much often, but when I have some ego kick and when I want to be a troll, I would respond, so why are you on the worldwide web of Satan? Why are you there? And then they don't respond, of course, because, or they'll respond with apostate, are you an apostate? And I'm like, you know what? I shouldn't be fighting because I was dumb too, so I understand.
Well, and I've seen that. I told somebody, I actually responded to someone in a public thing. They said something, and it was a witness. And I said, if your elders catch you, they're going to have your hide. This does not count as witnessing, people.
Yeah, constantly arguing with so-called apostate. That's not witnessing.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just and I'm not on there doing much. That was all I told her. I was like, your elders are going to get you, girl. You better watch it. Yeah. But, you know, my kids, one of the things my son said to me was that when he finally told me how he felt about being in the religion, because he was the one that I thought would never have left. That was the only reason I was staying in, was for my kids these past year and a half or so, was because 2 years, maybe a little longer, I wasn't fully awake yet. I didn't fully wake up until probably 2021, January or so, around 2021, that I fully woke up. I was fighting it, you know? What if I'm wrong? You know? What if, you know, don't do this to your kids, you know, all that sort of stuff. But my son's takeaway from it was he feels like the Bible taught very good morals. He learned how to be a good person, you know, thanks to my upbringing and everything. But, you know, we shouldn't have to answer to these men.
Right. So,
and that's what they all live in. They all live in fear. Everybody I know lives in fear of these men.
So I want to ask you, if you possibly can, give me a timeline since you was raised in it. Timeline from being yourself, your first awareness of being religion, until the end of you left okay. And you woke up.
Okay.
If you can say dates as well, possible, etc.
I will, and I'm sorry if it might be a little lengthy.
Oh, no, that is perfect.
Okay, as a child, small child, awareness, my more awareness that I remember is I remember my mom being disfellowshipped when I was 5. My dad got my mom disfellowshipped over some money issues. So that was the first time I learned that I should be shunning my mom at the Kingdom Hall. But I didn't really have to shun her because she was my mom technically, but I really should, and I shouldn't talk to her as much, you know, stuff like that. But shortly after that, I became an unbaptized publisher. Like I said, when I was 5, I gave my first part. I would study with my grandpa, and who was not a witness before he died right before I turned 6. I was very zealous. I had a grandmother that was very close to my dad's mom, and she was probably the only reason that it got inculcated in me, because my parents were so not, my mom. Parents tried teaching me when I was little, but that ended quickly. My dad would always say I was so mature he didn't need to. He really didn't give a shit. But I became a publisher at 6. I got baptized at 11. The year I got baptized, someone in the congregation who was like my spiritual grandfather passed away. And this is all part of the journey, but if I'm going off topic, please tell me. So from 5 to 11, I wanted to be a witness. I did, but I was doing bad stuff.
What can a 5-year-old do that's bad?
Not 5. Let's see, at like 7 or 8, I got caught kissing a boy at a trailer at my uncle's garage. And then I think because... And so, like, that was the first start of living in fear for the phone to ring, you know? Like, at any minute, Jehovah's going to make it known. I'm going to get in trouble. You know, that was the start of that inculcation and that right. Indoctrination of God saw you, you're bad, you know? I had, there were a couple of little friends that we kissed or we played together, you know? Apparently, that's way more common than that I'm finding out, you know? Like, you know, we played house and that happened. And so I was like, wow, I'm so bad. I'm so evil. Well, in counseling, it's kind of turned out that something might have happened to me that I'm not able to fully uncover, which is the explanation to some of the other things that happened to me growing up. But that's not my spirituality. So... When I was 11 and that I got baptized, I had my last set of questions with the person that was like my grandpa. He died like 7 days before my baptism. His daughter was this psychopath who came into our hall and got reinstated and went after my dad. Ended up being the woman who would have an affair with my dad all these years. So she would try to talk to me against my mom. She would take me out on service. She would have me spend the night. My dad would run anytime she needed help with her boys, blah, blah, blah. That was the first start of I was seeing, like, this is fucked up. This is not right. Like, my dad started telling me that him and my mom weren't having sex. My dad started telling me that my mom was a product of a rape. Actually, no, the lady is the one that told me that first, before my dad confirmed it, that my grandmother, who has passed now, she was raped, and that's how my mom was born. I'm learning all of this at 11 years old, mind you. That's got to fuck with someone, right?
Yeah, wow.
The other thing my dad said to me, and I'll never forget because I know what highway, I know exactly where we were at, and it replays in my head, is that he tells me the biggest lie he will ever tell me in my life. He says, your mother and I love Jehovah too much to ever get a divorce. So even if we don't love each other, we will stay married because neither of us will commit a sin in adultery. That motherfucker kept my mom tied to him to this day for a fucking position.
Wow.
So they continue. I beg my mom just about every day. Every morning I wake up, my dad's yelling at my mom because she asked for money for groceries or needs to go pay a bill or whatever, yelling and screaming. My mom starts working three jobs, like little jobs. Like she's got a daycare job during the day, a graveyard waitress job. And mind you, all those jobs are not to pay utilities because my dad did pay utilities. He paid the rent. He paid the electric, the water, the phone. Always paid for his ass to eat out every day that he went to work. But he forgot that we as kids needed things like clothes, shoes, shit for school. My mom as a woman needed her own shit.
Right.
So my mom had to do whatever she needed to do to get money, whether it be government assistance, borrowing money. So because she got in trouble for taking his check back when I was like 5 years old, he got her disfellowship. He never let her live it down. Like, I knew all about my parents' financial problems. I knew why my mom was disfellowshipped at 11. I knew, or even when I was younger, I knew everything. There were times that we were hiding from my dad because my mom was so scared. Because apparently after they left Bethel and came down to Texas, within the first couple of months, he pushed her, shoved her against the wall.
Wow.
So, this is while they were pioneering. She thought she married the cream of the crop when she married a Bethelite. So at 11, I'm learning all of these things. Of course, I see my dad treating my mom like shit. I'm torn. I love my mom. But see, this is me. On one side, I have my dad telling me all this stuff and this woman telling me my dad loves me and he just wants someone on his side and blah, blah, blah. But on the other side, I've been my mom's emotional support for as long as I can remember because all of my mom's family lives in New York. And ever since my mom got disfellowshipped, my dad's family hates her and nobody is nice to her or talks to her or treats her like anything. So I was my mom's emotional support. And at the same time, I was my dad's at 11.
Hard place
to
be.
And I've been in the middle of my parents' marriage ever since.
Wow.
So that had a big part of my spirituality. So I said, fuck this, I'm out when I'm 17. I moved out when I moved out when I was 17. My friend that was a witness who was also doing bad stuff and showed me some things. She would go cruising around downtown at night and stuff. Everyone thought she was perfect. It's so funny because I'm the one that got in trouble. And to this day, nobody thinks she did a single wrong thing. Because she went shoplifting with her cousin at a store. And of course, we were tight, stupid. I'm not going to lie. It happened. It's on record. I was a minor. I went back with her cousin a few days later and we got arrested. So I got in trouble with the elders, got reproved or whatever at that time, about 17, 18 years old, because I had moved out. I moved back home, but it was just with the intent to get out quickly. But my mom finally decided to leave my dad, and we went to California. I was about 18 and a half, almost 19. We went up there for about 6 months. My mom came back to get her stuff, and my dad convinced her and said that the elders would never believe her. She was going to be in trouble for leaving him without cause, even though, mind you, at this time, my dad had scripturally freed my mom years ago.
And she was disfellowshipped too.
She didn't know that. No, my mom was disfellowshipped when I was 5. Now, and she came back within 6 months.
Oh, she was back. Okay.
Yeah, she was back with, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot that. She was back within 6 months. She busted her butt and she was back. Back then, they actually... Back then, the elders actually looked at genuine repentance, not like now they make you wait a year no matter what. I've got a story about that. But she came back, so she was back. So My mom left to California. He told her she was going to be in trouble. She came back. She stayed. I came back, and shortly after that, I met my husband at work, and that's where we got married and had kids and stuff. And I married out of the religion. So although I engulfed myself in his life, I still had the physically, I had mentally in, physically out is what I was. Because I was like, I'm going to die. I'd be driving down the street and I'd burst into tears because I'd look at my baby boy in the back seat. If Armageddon were to come at any minute, I'm going to die. I need to go back to Jehovah. So I would make vain attempts while I was married. But then as soon as my husband gave me trouble or something came up, I would stop. It was never in me, right? And then we got divorced when my kids were like, my son was like 7, about 11 years ago. And I said, okay, well, I got to go back now. Well, I tried, didn't really, ended up pregnant with my daughter, got disfellowshipped for the first time. And then I stayed disfellowshipped for a couple of years. And then when my adopted daughter started acting up and moved out, I was like, oh my God, my kids need Jesus. I need Jesus. So we went back. And I told myself that all of this was happening because of my brainwashing. I told myself this was all happening and I needed to go back to Jehovah's organization. And I needed to make sure my kids loved Jehovah and that they did right by Jehovah, that they made it to paradise and they wouldn't have the life that their older sister, who's my adopted oldest, because me and my ex adopted his sister, was doing. She was living a hard life. And so That was the turning point where we went back 7, 8 years ago in 2014. I was still disfellowshipped, started teaching my kids. They started commenting. They seemed to like it. My son was happy because he had always kind of wanted to do it. When we went to the 2014 convention in Houston, my son said, that's going to be me next year getting baptized. But you know what I learned was that that's all they need, that stuff. They need the conventions, they need the assemblies, because they need to build up those endorphins and they need to get people to follow. Because you know what, the same kind of endorphins I got at a convention, I got at a Melaleuca convention where I sell cleaning products. Or I get, you get at a, you know what I mean? At some life coach thing. You yeah. get the same shit. Like, you're like, oh, this is the best thing in the world. I've got to tell the world about it. You get the same thing when you go to a Landmark forum, which is like,
oh my God, you did Landmark.
I did Landmark. My dad, and see, and that's the thing I look at back now, is my dad has always been looking for Zen. He's been, no offense, Zen. I don't mean to say Zen, but he has been looking for that peace and for that, he's been looking for that everlasting life here on earth. Every time I turn around, he's doing Melis products, or he's doing this other doctor who might have the answer. He's always looking for an answer. And that's what gets me, is my dad claims to be a witness and claims to want to get reinstated because he's still disfellowshipped. I haven't finished my story, but yet he's never really fully believed in the paradise because he's always looking for that answer. So he sent me to Landmark and it was great for my mental health. But it was the same shit as when you go to an assembly, that endorphins and, oh, yes, this is the best thing in the world and we're going to be great and we're perfect and you're great just as you. Yeah, it's the same thing. So in 15, 16, fast forward, we started going back to the meetings. I finally got reinstated on Christmas of 2014. And I said, and then we moved from the hall we were at that I got reinstated at because my uncle was there and I didn't want to be in his shadows. We moved to an adjacent kingdom hall, which was very small. And that's where Isaiah and the kids started making their friends. And I knew a lot of people there. And that's where my best friend was at, and the friend that I grew up with and her husband. And so we started pioneering, me and my son. We went to pioneer school together. My little girl, my middle one, got baptized a couple of years later. She was, I think it was right before she turned 11, or right, she was 10 or 11. She started pioneering after that. Different things, but what started happening for me, and we did great at the beginning, family worship, we did all of it, you know. We were watching all the Caleb and Sophia videos. As those started to come out, I actually started to get a little uncomfortable. I just felt like they were, I was like, wow, they're really laying it down, you know, like they're setting the rules, like period, you know?
Yeah.
And they're doing it in such a manipulative tactic. Like some of the videos are good, but some of them are just like too much. Well, we moved from the hall we were at. Our hall got that stupid merger that turns out it's all for money for them. You know that. When they merged all the Kingdom Halls and didn't care where anybody went. It's so funny because they did all this talking and bullshit about how, you know, this is Jehovah's Holy Spirit and everybody got sent accordingly based on Jehovah's Holy Spirit. You know what our hall did? They said, this service group go here, this service group go there, all of these go there. They didn't give a shit.
Right.
They did not do anything like this. It was hilarious. Oh, but that's Jehovah's direction. Okay.
Hey, if you don't follow, that means you don't love Jehovah, so.
Right, and they had constant parts about that. And I got told lots of shit because I was a single parent who had just fought for a certain night off at work. And I didn't trust Jehovah enough to say, fuck you, work. And you know why? Because nobody else was going to pay my bills.
Right.
So I went to the hall I was not assigned at. I had permission. I told the elders and stuff, and they were fine with it. I mean, what were they going to tell me? A single mom, do you guys want to pay my bills? I can't even get you guys to pay for my kid out to eat.
Nope, they don't care.
But I have to keep hearing about it. And so that was something, and that was several years ago. I had a friend who... And then I just interactions with people and seeing how they were, it just turns out everybody's freaking crazy. Everybody I know there, just about anybody I got close to, they're on meds, they're on antidepressants, they can't cope with life. But this is the happy God we're serving, and it's the best life ever.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so with the antidepressant, I had a question because I spoke into some Mormons and I didn't think if you're religious, you could be on meds, because if God is so powerful, why is med more powerful than him? Shouldn't him cure it instead of
this
meds?
That's true.
But no one had an answer to that question.
Yeah, well, see, for a long time, the witnesses were against it. And then they came out not too long ago about how sometimes it's necessary to get medical attention and blah, blah, blah. Because probably they were getting sued, most likely. So now there's, you hear about elders' wives that are all doped up on Prozac and...
Yeah.
I had, my friend Eileen would be like, oh yeah, this elder's wife, this elder's wife, this elder's wife. Oh yeah, but she's the self-righteous one who, you know, she's holier than thou.
But and drinking?
All this crap about all of these elders' wives who are on drugs. Do you think that's my business that they're on drugs? No.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, it really is. So, as we were, after we moved and we were doing good, Pioneer School was great. It really rejuvenated me and my son was ready to go. I look back now, though, right before Pioneer School, me and my son had a conversation where he was like, not happy about being a witness. And it surprised the hell out of me because it was what he always wanted. And I think back to that and I'm like, damn, I should have listened better. Mm. He was so hyped and happy and stuff, and he seemed like he was into it, and he was. He said he was. The last couple of years was a battle. It was like, do I want to, do I not want to, you know, until finally he just was like, I don't want to. He was had already applied for a school out of the city, and he was gonna move.
So he trusted you enough to tell you that?
My son, well, yeah, we've talked everything's out. Yeah, no, my son had started applying this past year to go to this chef school in Austin, which is like an hour and a half away from us. I totally supported him because, you know, they don't encourage education. But even though we were witnesses, I always told my kids, you know, I don't want them to struggle the way I have. So he applied and he was going to do it. And then we all had this powwow, me, him, and my 14-year-old. And it turned out that the reason he was trying to do that was to get away from the religion, really.
Oh, wow.
He was going to do that. And since we talked everything out and all that stuff, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. But yeah, he didn't go away to school, thank God. But, I mean, he's going to still go to school, but just not yet.
So I'm shocked that, because I didn't trust my parents about anything. Because like, if you trust them and you tell them something, you get in trouble. So that's the thing. Everyone tells on each other, even mother, father, brother, sister.
Right. No, see, I did this pact with my kids years ago. I'm Puerto Rican. I grew up with a narcissist for a dad. So I know I have a temper. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be fake. I can't lie. For one, I'm a horrible liar. That was what always got me in trouble. But I did this thing with my kids where I told them when they were small, I was like, if you ever need to talk to me, all you need to do is come and say, Mom, you can't get mad. And I need to talk to you. I need to tell you something.
Well, that's nice.
And it worked. And they knew it. They knew that was the pact. That was the pact that we made. It didn't mean that there would not be no consequences, but it would not be Mom losing her temper and stuff. We'd talk it all out, and they tested that theory several times. That's so clear. The way it happened was, one of the reasons I started to wake up is we moved to another congregation because we were going to be moving by my parents, because I lived like 20, 30 minutes from my parents, and my mom had cancer. Or she had been possibly diagnosed. We were testing it out. We were getting her therapy, stuff like that. She ended up having endometrial cancer, actually ovarian cancer, because they took everything. It spread. Uterine, I'm sorry, that's what it's called, uterine. This was in 2019. So I started taking my mom to the doctor, dealing with that stuff. And then by August, that my parents we were at a different hall. And when we moved to that hall, we met this family. And this family had a daughter that had just been sexually molested. They were going through the court cases. They were dealing with it. It was by her brother-in-law. And the elders told them not to tell anyone about it. Mind you, my very close friend goes to the same congregation as the pedophile who molested that child. So the pedophile went to the same Kingdom Hall, different congregation. To the point that one of the times where we showed up to the meeting, the pedophile was there and the child that had been molested was there at the same time, which is her brother-in-law. They were there at the same time and they... You know, it was just, she was freaking out, she had to leave, or I don't know, it was just crazy. But what got me was, this guy was convicted. He is a sex offender. But no one's supposed to know about it in the congregation? My friend at the time was going to that same congregation with her two girls who are the same ages as my girls. I was not okay with that.
Wow.
It wasn't like it was something that happened 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
This had just happened. This guy was getting, he just got his sentencing and everything within the last year or so. Wow. So I found out about that. Didn't sit right with me. That started bothering me. And then the way the elders did certain other things there. Well, then my best friend in the whole wide world went and confessed her sins to the elders. I didn't even know the stuff she had done. Nobody knew. And I was close to her and her mom at the time. We got some, like, we were a kindred spirit for some reason. When we moved to the hall, we got close. And she got disfellowship. She came and told me she was getting disfellowship. She went and she confessed everything to the elders. They said, okay, pat on the, good job confessing. Well, then she remembered stuff. And she went back and told them the rest of what she remembered. Should she have been disfellowshipped? Or is that not the truest sign of repentance? When no one would have known what she did unless you told them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you didn't remember and you went back and told them.
Right.
So when that happened, I was like, fucked up. And then COVID hit right after that. She got disfellowshipped like by January of 2020, sorry. But anyways, I jumped around, I'm sorry. But with my dad and my mom having cancer, what happened in August in September. We were getting ready to move over there by my parents. My dad refinanced the house, got my mom to sign on it. And 2 weeks after that, he comes and tells her, oh, by the way, I cheated on you 20-something years ago. And I cheated again with my secretary, who was a regular pioneer in the Italian group.
Why would he tell her that?
He went, because the whore that my dad slept with while my mom was dealing with cancer was also my mom's friend for 13-something years.
Wow.
She's also 5 years older than me. I'm going to be 40. She's probably like 45 or 48 maybe. So she could be his daughter. even more disgusting. And she always called him like dad. That's what makes it disgusting. Okay, she viewed him as like another dad.
Uh-huh.
And she slept with him. I have nothing against age gap couples, but when you go 13 years calling someone dad and then you sleep with them, that's just not okay.
So, I mean, like, so, I cannot understand how these people are mentally in, though. It's like...
Oh, they are. She absolutely is, because guess what? She went to the elders, confessed, did not get disfellowshipped, and continued to talk to my dad. Then I saw her at the assembly 4 months later, right after my mom had her uterine surgery and had her whole, you know, uterus removed and developed an infection, and we were going through hell. I saw that bitch at the assembly, and I went up to her very calmly and very nicely, and I said, excuse me, can you just leave my dad alone? And that bitch tried to make the biggest fucking scene at the assembly. I literally was like this. I'm sorry, excuse me, sister, excuse me? Because I had a part that day. I had a part on the watchtower. Do you think you could just leave my dad alone? My parents have gone through enough. But I got pulled into the elders' room for that shit.
Wow.
Because it was none of my business. None of my business, because I'm the one taking care of my mom. I'm dealing with all of this shit. But those fucking dumbasses, elders, are telling me, especially the one that was related to me. He's such an idiot. He doesn't even know that his son jacks off to underage girls over the phone, which I found out about that. Anyways, so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I got in trouble, pulled in, because I shouldn't have created a scene, and as a pioneer, I should have known better. And it wasn't a scene. I just told her that, and I walked away. I broke down, and I cried to a friend of mine, but then I still got on the stage and gave my part that day.
You know what? Something I discovered about religion, sadly, like, okay, so as you mentioned, you brought your kids in because people need structure. I feel like somewhere, religion or anything that's controlled, something went wrong. I think what went wrong is people not being allowed to be what a human being is. And then once you mess up, instead of being basically, instead of like, how you call it? Not being punished, but instead of talking to someone with compassion, empathy, and kindness, and steering you back in the right way, you are punished. It's kind of like going to jail. You go to jail, or you go to prison without being rehabilitated, and then when you go back out, and then you are in shame and fear and guilt and judgment, but you actually are not rehabilitated because you're just hiding it.
You were just in timeout. Yeah. They think we shunned you, so that was your timeout, and that rehabilitated you on your own. You need to do it on your own.
No, because what that does, it keeps you the fear and the shame.
Is that what Jesus did in the Bible, though? He said, y'all go fix yourselves and then come back to me. It's just the more and more, I don't know where my faith is, to be perfectly honest.
Mm.
I'm still figuring that out, and I'm letting my kids figure it out for themselves.
So talk to me about the kid part. Like, okay, so you in 2019 or 2021, okay, so January.
My dad got this fellowship. 2020 started. We were in lockdown, started doing the Zoom meetings. My mom was living with me. My dad's disfellowshipped. Me and my kids joined a Japanese foreign language group because my son had gone to Japan with his best friend and my friend, the one I told you that was like my brother, that whole family, he went with them to Japan. We paid for it. We paid for my son's trip, part of the trip, but they took him with them back in like when he was like 15. 14 or 15, my son just turned 18 a week ago. So we're doing this whole thing in 2020, and I just, I've been thinking these things. I've been having these feelings, but I wasn't going to do anything against my kids. September 2020, I start kind of looking online dating to JW Match, which is where you can find other witnesses. Every witness I find has a porn problem, a masturbation problem, who knows what kind of porn they're watching,
yep.
and a sex problem because they're sexually deprived. They can't stop masturbating or they can't stop watching porn. Like just about every guy I came across, right?
Because they're not being allowed to be human.
Exactly. Exactly. But you know what? That's not every man, because I dated men out in the world and they were not that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And the man I'm with is not that way. He's not some, you know, like the way they talk about it. The ones that were worse were the ones in the organization who talked to the elders, and the elders, one brother I talked to from JW Match, let me tell you, this is just a funny story. He literally has an elder logged into his phone in case he goes to a bad website. He has someone monitoring his phone. Like, his phone is childproof, in other words. The brother gets an alert if he starts going to something questionable.
Wow.
That's how much control these Jehovah's Witnesses give these elders. Anyways.
Total brainwashing.
I finally said, fuck that, and I went on some regular websites and did some bad dates, and then the snow in San Antonio happened. I don't know if you remember that, where we had no power.
Oh, yeah. Was that Texas?
Yes. I'm in San Antonio, Texas. Yes.
Yeah. That was crazy. So, wow, you were there? I'm so sorry. That,
yes, with a disabled mother who has severe arthritis, healing from cancer, you know, been healing. And then I have three children. We had no power for 2.5 days.